Aldo Moro is dead. The Red Brigades have carried out their threat, and Italy is in mourning tonight for the man who had been premier and foreign minister and might have been the next president. It is 55 days since he was kidnapped and his bodyguard slain on a street in Rome. Jerry Bowen reports.
Moro's body was found in the backseat of a car parked in the heart of Rome near the headquarters of the ruling Christian Democrats, the party Moro shaped. He had been shot 11 times by what police describe as a machine gun pistol. The body was covered by a blue coat and wrapped in a red blanket. Investigators say he may have been shot late this morning, and the Red Brigade, his captors and now killers, brazenly brought the body into the center of the city to be discovered, the same way 54 days ago that they made their daring daylight abduction of the five-time former prime minister. Moro's murder has stunned and outraged this country. Spontaneous demonstrations involving thousands of people were held across Italy. And there was bitterness expressed by Moro's family, who had pleaded in vain for the government to deal for Moro's release. In a tense 8-line statement, the family said it wanted no public mourning, no ceremonies, no state funeral for Moro. The family adding, quote, "History will write about Aldo Moro's life and death."
There have been words of sympathy and outrage from around the world, and the question remains, was the government right or wrong to let Aldo Moro die? Bert Quint reports.
It was as difficult a decision as leaders of a country can make in time of peace. By refusing to deal with the Red Brigades and release 13 imprisoned terrorists, they knew they might be condemning their chief and their friend to death. But the Christian Democrats, along with the Communist Party and most of Italy's other political groups, held fast. To deal with terrorists, they reasoned, was to encourage more terror. And so, Aldo Moro died.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide. You cannot get past your future. Why can't you get past your future? You heard me right the first infinity. I often go back to when I was 16, when I choose to recall days when it seemed that I was always being led down the dark hallways of hell into some empty 145th and St. Nick apartment with nothing but a kitchen table and a scale and some dread ready to blast my physical form back into dust. Ashes to ashes, the lust for cash passes when you're starving. Standing on the urine-covered floor of an East Orange, New Jersey jail cell. Can you see yourself there? Ain't nobody here gonna be the next John Gotti. The average black drug dealer is nothing more than a newspaper delivery boy for the status quo, like COINTELPRO inside the US organization, only there to pacify the masses, like the opium war. The only way to ensure that the have-nots will continue to have not is to be sure that the have-nots have at least one thing. Good drugs. And read my lips, black drug dealers don't never stay rich. Your lawyer don't work for you, you work for your lawyer. And every dime you make that the cops don't take will eventually go straight into your lawyer's pocket. All that cash you stash in your sock getting shot at on the corner for the past 3 years, his profit. All them sweaty $100 bills you dropped in that safe deposit box, you ain't got shit. All three branches of this government rightfully consider you to be their bitch and your community are just John's. And the closest you'll ever get to succeeding is a tax evasion proceeding in which the IRS slides that Rolex off your wrist. It had to end like this. You can't get past your future. Why can't you get past your future? You heard me right. The first infinity. You better get your life together before a bathtub full of flaming gasoline does it for you. The streets are filled with 9mm castrations for overnight crack dealing sensations who might have shot 2 or 3 lowlifes but have yet to even contemplate a murder worth investigating. Ain't got no cops on your payroll, ain't got no judges in your pocket, and if listening to hip-hop is making you believe that you're above the law, then you need to hurry up and stop it, because your future was written into the Declaration of Independence. Your life story was discussed in Thomas Jefferson's lodge meetings. Your tragedy was joked about in George Washington's investment club as they sipped on spirits that they traded your great-great-great-great-grandfather for, like the guns that your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather traded him for, like the temporary cash flow that you now trade your time on this earth for. Your past is coming back. Your future is even more present. Your soul has been on this planet 36 times, and you have yet to learn the first lesson. If you're young, black, and male in this civilization, then the proper foundation is education, street smarts, and patience. But most important, you never forsake your principles. I said you never forsake your principles. I said you never forsake your principles. Because if you forsake your principles, you will never get past your future.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
People ask me all the time, what is it like now to be back? What is it like not to be in the government any longer? And I can sum it up for you this way. I can get up in the morning, I can read the newspaper, and I can say, isn't that interesting? And I can say, excuse me, but you forgot something. Let's talk about American power and the party.
Lecturing on international law. She's a war criminal.
Mad liberator. Death operator. Rock the data. Amazing flavor. Yo, the way I feel. Sometimes it's too hard to sit still. Things are so passionate, times are so real. Sometimes I try to chill, mellow down, blow a smoke. A smile on my face, but it's really no joke. You feel it in the street, the people breathe without hope. They going through the motion, they dimming down the focus get clear, then the light turns sharp, and the eyes grow teary, the mind grow weary. I speak it so clearly, sometimes y'all don't hear me. I push it past the bass, no nations got to feel me. I feel it in my bones, black, I'm so wide awake that I'm hardly ever sleep. My flow forever deep, and it's volumes of scriptures when I breathe on a beat. My presence speak volumes before I say a word. I'm everywhere, penthouse, pavement, the curb. Cradle to the grave, so cathedral of a shell. Universal ghetto life, holla black, you know it well. Quiet storm, vital form, pen push the bright across. Mind is a vital force, high level right across. Soul is the lion's roar, voice is the siren. I swing round, ring out, and bring down the tyrant. Chop a small axe and knock a giant lopsided. The world is so dangerous, there's no need for frightening. Suckers trying to hide like the struggle won't find them. Then the sun busts through the cloud to clearly remind them. It's everywhere, penthouse, pavement, the curb. Cradle to the grave, talk of each of a shell. Universal ghetto life, holla black, you know it well. What it is, you know, they know what it is. We know, y'all know what it is. Ecstatic, there it is.
Had he not been there, then there would have been some significant consequences. Obviously, we're going into the sovereign territory of another country and landing helicopters and conducting a military operation. And so if it turns out that it's a wealthy prince from Dubai who's in this compound, and you know, we've sent special forces in, we've got problems.
What it is, you know, We know what it is. They know, y'all know what it is. You know, it is. What it is, you know, we know what it is. They know, y'all know what it is. You know, it is.
Fantastic.
Original. And always on time. And rocking your mind.
Sit and come relax. Riddle of the Mac. It's the patch. I'm a soldier in the middle of Iraq. But say about noonish. Coming out the whip and looking at me curious. A young Iraqi kid. Carrying laundry. What's wrong, G? Hungry?
No, give me my oil. Get out my country.
And in Arabian, barking other stuff till his moms come grab him and they walk off in a rush. Distrust, feeling like I was pissed upon wound. I'm like, surely hope that we can fix our differences soon. Bye. Buying apples, hun breaking on.
Fruit, you take everything. Why not just take the damn fruit like pasta?
I don't understand it. On another planet? 15 months of this stuff? How I'm gonna manage? And increasing the sentiment, gentlemen, getting down on their Middle Eastern instruments. Realize trapping this crowd, huh? Walk over, kicked one of my fabulous raps.
Dottie, Dottie.
Arab jaw drop, they well wish they glad rap. Now they kick considered like an Elvis of Baghdad.
At the end of the day, this was still a 55-45 situation. I mean, we could not say definitively that bin Laden was there.
What it is,
بعد عند نزلت وشوف واحد يضحك واحد يبكي.
تو اللي بعتوك؟
ايه انا اللي بعتوني. ها.
What it is, you know, they know what it is. We know, y'all know what it is. Ecstatic, there it is. Huh. What it is, you know, we know what it is. They know, y'all know what it is. You know, it is. What it is, you know, we know what it is. They know, y'all know what it is. You know, it is.
This was your decision.
Yeah.
Whether to proceed or not and how to proceed. What was the most difficult part of that decision?
The most difficult part is always the fact that you're sending guys into harm's way, and there are a lot of things that could go wrong. I mean, there are a lot of moving parts here. So my biggest concern was, if I'm sending those guys in and Murphy's Law applies and something happens, can we still get our guys out? So that's point number one. These guys are going in the darkest of night, and they don't know what they're going to find there. They don't know if the building is rigged. They don't know if there are explosives that are triggered by a particular door opening. So huge risks that these guys are taking. And so my number one concern was, if I send them in, can I get them out? Point number two was, as outstanding a job as our intelligence teams did, and I cannot praise them enough. They did an extraordinary job with just the slenderest of bits of information to piece this all together. At the end of the day, this was still a 55-45 situation. I mean, we could not say definitively that bin Laden was there.
though we've only seen computer animations of the raid on bin Laden's compound, you might think you have seen it or something very much like it at the movies or even in video games. They've been imitating reality for a while.
Scene is familiar. An elite team of commandos under the cloak of night deploying in a courtyard.
This is a kill, no capture mission.
Then weapons at the ready, entering a house where their target remains unaware, moving swiftly and ruthlessly toward their ultimate prize. Because we do not get to witness actual counterterrorism raids, even on the news, scenes like these from movies and television forge in our minds a powerful image of what it must look and feel like when the real thing happens. A thing as real as the raid on bin Laden's lair.
How close have the movies come to showing us what that raid must have actually been like?
The movies have come close, like Black Hawk Down.
Retired Sergeant Major Jim Deaver spent 25 years with the Marine Corps, including work in special ops. For similarities to the bin Laden operation, he points to 2001's Black Hawk Down, the story of the 1993 raid inside Somalia.
The Rangers secure the outer perimeter and they fast roll for Blackhawks.
Its truth was no accident, according to its producer, Jerry Bruckheimer.
We rely so heavily on research and hire people like the SEAL team guys who work with us on Black Hawk Down and the Special Forces who work with us.
So when you're watching a movie like that, someone with your experience, you're saying, wow, that's the way they really do it.
Correct. I go, wow, they did a great job.
For the last 11 years, Deavers had a job of his own in the entertainment world, advising productions on all matters military.
I tell you, baby, things are gonna change. Looking like we were caught out in the rain. Feel lonely, that's the way it goes sometimes. Could I ever have been so blind? Oh, could I ever have been so blind? Could I ever have been so blind? Yeah, could I ever have been so blind?
All of us try to imagine what happened in that suburban town on Sunday. It's your images we're thinking of.
Now you know it's not exactly what it was like, but at least you have some idea of what it was like. And I think that does help. I think that helps people come to terms with things emotionally.
The emotions in this photo of the White House Situation Room during the raid have made it memorable. A real-life version of a place TV dramas and movies like Air Force One have shown us in the past.
In many shows and movies, you've seen that same shot, and it's always a little strange and eerie to know that what happens in real life is actually not that far away from what happens in art.
In counterterrorism, such thinking does have a role to play. The New York Times' Thomas Friedman refers to 9/11 as a failure of imagination, that our minds simply couldn't conceive of terrorists flying planes into buildings.
I think that's probably right, and it's there's so many things they could have done. How do you pick out that one beforehand?
But in a weird way, it is a mirror image of the storyteller's job, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely is. As Mark Twain said, the only difference between fiction and reality is fiction has to be credible.
Hardest thing I ever had to do was stand up straight and tell
an image the White House wants the world to see. Apparently a disheveled and much diminished Osama bin Laden watching himself on TV. The footage was edited by the Pentagon and released without sound. It's said to be one of five videos found in bin Laden's compound. The image was front page news in Pakistan today, but in Abbottabad, where he met his end, there was plenty of skepticism. It's all a fake. Nothing happened, said Mohammed, who's been selling newspapers here for 50 years. Shabir says it's a case of mistaken identity. He claims the man in the picture is his neighbor.
His name is Akbar Khan. He owns the house, they said, was Osama's house. I know him very well.
If the aim was to persuade the doubters, it didn't work here.
This picture is not Osama. It's very suspicious. This picture.
It is very suspicious and it is made by advanced technology.
Made by computer.
Oh, by computer, yeah, man.
We've now spoken to more than 50 people in the market and only one believes that the man in the video watching television was in fact Osama bin Laden. People here say the Americans haven't proven anything. They haven't shown bin Laden's dead body. Many still don't believe that the Al-Qaeda leader was living here or that he was killed here. It's unclear when and where the videos were made. Tonight, President Obama said bin Laden must have had some sort of support network in Pakistan, perhaps involving people in government, which must be investigated.
Conspiracy theories.
I don't have a TV, but one of my friends watches Fox News and he thinks all of this is crazy. They must have some way to brainwash the masses through that television or something, because anybody that watches a lot of TV, they're brain dead.
So why do you think I should work for the National Security Agency?
Well, you'd be working on the cutting edge. You'd be exposed to the kind of technology that you wouldn't see anywhere else because we've classified it. Super string theory, chaos math, advanced algorithms.
Code breaking.
Well, that's one aspect of what we do.
Oh, come on. I mean, that is what you do. You guys handle 80% of the intelligence workload. You're seven times the size of the CIA.
We don't like to brag about that, Will. But you're exactly right. So the way I see it, the question isn't, why should you work for the NSA? The question is, why shouldn't you?
Why shouldn't I work for the NSA? That's a tough one. But I'll take a shot. Say I'm working at the NSA and somebody puts a code on my desk, something no one else can break. Maybe I take a shot at it, and maybe I break it. And I'm real happy with myself because I did my job well. But maybe that code was the location of some rebel army in North Africa or the Middle East. And once they had that location, they bombed the village where the rebels are hiding. 1,500 people that I never met, never had no problem with, get killed. Now the politicians are saying, oh, send in the Marines to secure the area because they don't give a shit. It won't be their kid over there getting shot, just like it wasn't them when their number got called because they were all pulling a tour in the National Guard. It'll be some kid from Southie over there taking shrapnel in the ass. He comes back to find that the plant he used to work at got exported to the country he just got back from, and the guy who put the shrapnel in his ass got his old job because he'll work for 15 cents a day and no bathroom breaks. Meanwhile, he realizes the only reason he was over there in the first place was so that we could install a government that would sell us oil at a good price. And of course, the oil companies use a little skirmish over there to scare up domestic oil prices, a cute little ancillary benefit for them, but it ain't helping my buddy at $2.50 a gallon. They're taking their sweet time bringing the oil back, of course. Maybe they even took the liberty of hiring an alcoholic skipper who likes to drink martinis and play slalom with the icebergs. It ain't too long till he hits one, spills the oil, and kills all the sea life in the North Atlantic. So now my buddy's out of work, he can't afford to drive, so he's walking to the job interviews, which sucks because the shrapnel in his ass is giving him chronic hemorrhoids, and meanwhile he's starving because every time he tries to get a bite to eat, the only blue plate special they're serving is North Atlantic scrod with Quaker State. So what did I think? I'm holding out for something better. I figure while I'm at it, why not just shoot my buddy? Take his job, give it to his sworn enemy, hike up gas prices, bomb a village, club a baby seal, hit the hash pipe, and join the National Guard. I could be elected president.
Everyone around the net seems to think nanothermite was used, and they are quite upset at the notion that you suggest otherwise. In fact, they feel as if it's intentional disinfo.
Absolutely. This is quite interesting. It's a whole area of study in of itself in the way that this has been promulgated and taken up. And, you know, I make some quite bullish comments when I come to this for several reasons. The first one is that I was taken in by this thermite theory when it started to come onto the internet. So this is what I've actually written about in my free book, 9/11 Finding the Truth. This is one of the sort of themes in this book, and I present the evidence in this book for how this came about. Because the thermite theory first started to appear just after the NIST reports were published in 2005. About a month after these reports were published, a physicist from Brigham Young University suddenly appeared on the scene. His name was Dr. Stephen E. Jones. And he said that he thought that thermite had been used to help take the towers down. And he proposed that many of the steel girders in the towers were actually, you know, cut through with thermite. And the evidence for this was basically twofold. Firstly, that there was molten metal found in the basements of the buildings following their destruction. And this story later essentially seemed to turn out to be false, or perhaps not false in every sense of the word, but evidence that he was using wasn't actually pertinent to what it actually was that people were seeing. I'll try and get to that later if we get time. But so Jones comes out with this thermite paper in sort of about September 2005. He says there are now four videos showing molten metal falling from the towers just before the destruction. But actually, when you see this molten metal coming out, there's actually very little of it. There's only, you know, it only comes out of the tower for, I don't know, 30 seconds, something like that, if that. And we don't actually know whether this video is real. It could be real, and if it is real, we're not quite sure exactly what it's showing, but we're pretty sure it's not steel girders melting, because the molten material seems to be coming from the wrong place anyway. But I took this as being an honest appraisal of the evidence when he came out with this, when Stephen E. Jones came out with this thermite evidence. I thought he was being honest, basically. And I was invited to join this group called Scholars for 9/11 Truth. So he came out with this paper. I was actually one of the people that reviewed it. And I thought, him being a PhD of physics, he would know what he was talking about. So I didn't particularly, at that point, take issue with the science. And indeed, not even the science, but the basic observations which were in this paper. So I supported this research at that time. And it was really only, I think, in the mid to late summer of 2006 when I started to become aware there were certain people who were pointing out fallacies in this thermite theory. And the main one, which I mentioned in one of the last videos we did, was Dr. Judy Wood. And she didn't really go into sort of heavy science, as it were. She just was asking the question, where did the towers go? And in essence, that really brings us to the single basic observation which completely refutes the idea that thermite could have played any significant part in the destruction of the towers. And I think I said this in the last video, but I'm going to say it again. The towers turned to dust. And if you look at what thermite does, it does not turn things to dust. So once these problems began to be pointed out with this research relating to thermite, then it started to morph. And Stephen E. Jones says, well, actually, it might have been thermate, which is a combination of thermite, and then you add in sulfur, which lowers the melting point of steel. So then once it was pointed out that thermite couldn't have done it in its ordinary state, it changed to thermate. And then it changed to nanothermite, and then it changed to nanothermate, and then we had thermite analogues, and then we had active thermitic materials, which essentially is a meaningless term, because Thermite is actually, as I mentioned in some of the comments, that if you go and look up the chemical formula for thermite, it's actually a combination of iron oxide and aluminium powder. And you mix these together, two simple materials, and then you put in a hot fuse, and it starts off a small reaction between a small amount of the iron oxide and the aluminium, and it's actually called a redox reaction, an oxidation reduction reaction, where the oxygen is transferred from the iron, which is of lower reactivity, to the aluminium, which is more reactive, and you get the product being molten iron. But we didn't see molten iron when the towers came down. We didn't see these hot volcanic type flames coming out of the towers as they were destroyed. No, we saw them turning to dust, and anyone could go and observe that. You just go and watch the videos again. How much fire and flame, etc., etc., can you see as the towers actually coming down? So you don't really need any calculations or any real science as such. You just need observation and a knowledge of what the thermite reaction actually looks like. And you can go and put in, to YouTube, thermite experiment or thermite reaction, and you get 50 videos. The momentum for the thermite theory built up. And this group called Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth was formed. And they also talked about thermite being the causative agent, despite all the problems that I've described. And we had this paper published, which was the active thermitic materials discovered in the World Trade Center dust. So people thought, oh yes, we've got a peer-reviewed paper now. It's been published in a scientific journal. Well, actually, that's not technically correct, because the journal that this paper was published in, which was called the Bentham Open Chemical Journal, is not a recognized regular journal. It's what's called a vanity journal. And what that means is that you can write a scientific paper, and as long as it basically conforms to the standard of a paper, you pay them $800 and they will publish this paper in their journal. And there is a number of significant problems with that paper. Like, for example, it doesn't address why the towers turned to dust. It doesn't address why Hurricane Erin was closest to New York at 8 o'clock in the morning. It doesn't address how cars were affected over a quarter of a mile away, I think nearly half a mile away from the World Trade Center. How can these cars have been affected by a thermite reaction over a quarter of a mile away? How can thermite selectively affect materials? How can thermite leave paper unburned, which we saw in large quantity? If you've got this huge, hot, 2,000 degrees centigrade thermite reaction leaving paper unburned, how is that going to work? It doesn't work. It doesn't fit the evidence. It doesn't fit the data at all. So this is what you come to when you study the evidence. And then there's another side to this story too, because in 2006, I began to discover a bit more about Stephen E. Jones. And you can go and Google him and the words heavy Watergate. So Jones is basically playing the same role in cold fusion as he is in 9/11 research. It's called limited hangout. In other words, he's giving you some of the truth. For example, in cold fusion, he's telling you that the cold fusion effect is real, but he's saying it's no use. With 9/11 research, he's saying, oh yes, it wasn't Al-Qaeda that destroyed the World Trade Center, but neither was it directed energy weapons technology. Neither was it anything to do with some type of low-energy nuclear reaction, which is exactly what the Hutchinson effect creates. So I think that Steve Jones, who has connections to Los Alamos National Laboratories, which is where they developed the atomic bomb in the 1940s, I think he knows how the World Trade Center was destroyed. And I think the thermite theory was put forward to lead people down a blind alley, and they knew they could control it. They could control the groups that were talking about thermite, and that is still going on. Here we are, almost 10 years after 9/11 now. The thermite theory came out at the end of 2005. So we're 5 years on from that, just about now. Almost 6 years on, in fact. And everyone, almost everyone, is still talking about thermite, and the comments on your previous video bear witness to that. So if you want to know the real story, folks, you're going to have to do even more research, because the Thermite theory is a cover-up in of itself. You are being duped by this theory, as I was in 2006, but you can find the truth if you keep looking for it. Now, for those that want to have a more scientific explanation and look at some of the science, I have somebody who wrote to me called T. Mark Hightower, who I've corresponded with several times. I think if you go and look for his name, you'll find out who he works for. I won't say that in this video because I'm not sure if he wants me to, but I don't think he makes it a great secret. You'll be able to find it out. T. Mark Hightower is his name. And he's written a paper very recently, which he kindly sent to me, looking at the chemistry of the thermite reaction and how it doesn't explain the evidence. And guess what? He started to write this paper having read Dr. Judy Wood's book, Where Did the Towers Go? He wrote it within a couple of weeks of reading that, and he collaborated with a couple of people. And the title of his paper, Has Nanothermite Been Oversold to the 9/11 Truth Community? And in that paper, you would look at his research where he goes into whether nanothermite could actually be an explosive or an incendiary. He looks at some of the other papers that have been developed to test this, and you can see that he concludes that thermite doesn't explain the evidence. So if you want to look at that, you can look at it. If you want to ignore it, then you're not going to find the truth, folks. I'm sorry, but I've been hearing this for 5 years now, and whenever we post something about Hurricane Erin, somebody will come back mentioning thermite. It happens all the time. It's gone right through the truth community like a virus, and it's still ongoing today.
You certainly appear to have conviction and belief in what you say, but you're could be accused of deliberately disseminating disinfo.
Mm-hmm. And I have been accused of that. I've been accused of being an agent. I've been accused of being very slick. I've been accused of several things. But the point is, you have to look at the basic empirical evidence. Does thermite turn things to dust or doesn't it? What can turn steel to dust? Some people even deny that the steel turned to dust. So if you deny that, then where do you go from there? I mean, so whether I'm putting out disinformation or not becomes irrelevant, because you can look at the evidence for yourselves. You can go to the NIST report. You can look at the pictures in the NIST report, these 10,000 pages of reports. You can see if you can explain what is shown in them. And that's exactly what Dr. Wood did. If I was putting out disinformation, why would I have been involved in a court case which attempted to sue some of the military-industrial complex contractors, such as Science Applications International Corporation, Applied Research Associates, and Boeing? Why would I have been involved in a court case to try and bring those people to account for covering up what happened? You don't really get that many disinformation people to put setting up court cases. Also, Richard Gage and Steve Jones put together what's called a request for correction when they sent that to NIST. In other words, they challenged NIST. Now, in the first version of their request for correction, they didn't mention the word thermite at all. They didn't mention the phrase molten metal at all. Why would that be? They're so convinced, and they're going around the country doing world tours as they are now, that thermite is the cause. Why didn't they actually put that word in the first version of their paper to their request for correction to NIST? That's not disinformation. You can go and download the paper from NIST site. You can download that paper from the Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice website. You can search for the word thermite in PDF reader yourself and find that it's not there. The only place you'll find it is not as a separate word, but in the URL where he links to the paper. And in the appeal for that document, he lists some other thermite research, but it's not his own. The thermite research that's listed in the appeal for the RFC refers to some fire survey from 1996 about some arson research or something. So is that disinformation? Well, you have to go and check it for yourself, and then you'll know, won't you?
What I find strange is there's an assumption that this was a false flag event, that it's almost goes without saying. We're stuck in the argument of was it thermite or was it not, or directed energy weapons, but it's just a funny assumption that the whole general population should accept that it was a false flag and that the whole thing is a lie that we're being told. I haven't really presented you with a question, but do you have a comment on that?
Well, if I may phrase your question for you, which is what I think it might be, is why does it matter? What does it matter that whether it was thermite, whether it was directed energy weapons, whether it was HAARP, whether it was gravity? Is that your question? Would that be kind of what you're saying, or?
That is an excellent question, so please use that.
Right. Well, the reason why it matters is it's to do with energy, because the events of 9/11 prove that free energy technology is real. It's not a theory. It's in the evidence. In the same way that we can prove that the moon goes round the earth and the earth goes round the sun, through observation and measurement, we can prove that. You can prove through observation and measurement that the World Trade Center was destroyed using directed energy weapons. It is not a theory. So that proves that some group, whoever it is, we don't know who the group is, has an advanced weapon system, and it was used on 9/11, and that employs technology which we don't publicly have knowledge of. It's black technology. So people need to go and do research into black budget programs and see what they can find out, because there is some information that seems to be valid. So we now can not only say, for example, that 9/11 was an inside job, or 9/11 was a false flag event, or whichever way you care to describe it. We can also say, for example, that the energy situation that we're in is a scam. We don't need fossil fuels, because that somebody has the technology to get energy out of the vacuum, and they've turned it into a weapon. So that's why it's important to realize that. If you just go with the thermite story, the reason why that was put out there was to cover up the energy issue and to steer them away from thinking about it. Because not only is the false flag nature of 9/11 revealed as a, you know, for what it is, if you go down the directed energy weapons route and you get to the truth, which is what it is, you're then exposing the energy fraud that we've been subject to for the last 120 years or so. Go on from there. Look at the weather on 9/11. Look at what Hurricane Erin did and how its energy system was employed as part of this operation. What does that then reveal? Well, it reveals that the whole story of climate change is also a fraud, because somebody has the ability to manipulate the weather, at least in terms of steering hurricane storm systems. So the climate change scam is also exposed. So that, to me, if I was to give you a reason, why is Dr. Judy's research attached, why is Dr. Wood's research attached so much? It's because not only does it expose 9/11 as an inside job, or whatever expression you care to use, it exposes the energy fraud, and it also exposes the climate change fraud as well. So that's why it's so very, very dangerous to have people understanding what is really going on.
Well, we're going to get a headline out at InfoWars.com. My writer was just in here during the break, trying to get an answer from me with what to go with. Obviously, it's big news. Your opinion is highly valued out there by independents and people that love liberty. And I think the fair headline is Governor Jesse Ventura, or Jesse Ventura. I've been lied to so much. I question, or I need more information. I mean, what should the headline be?
I've been lied to so much, I question everything. It's that simple, Alex.
Clearly scripted this entire thing. And Governor, just going over more of the lies we've been told, and I think it's common sense to question. Time my magazine's out saying that I've reversed myself now that they've, well, Jones now has to basically admit he's wrong. I did not do that. I'm right. The New York Post on May 7th ran a headline, "The Truth Hurts." You bring up the point of lies. I mean, this is very, very, very bizarre. Big business, and the truth is, it's not going anywhere. Well, now they're saying that.
You know, I'll tell you something, Alex. We needed to capture bin Laden. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
We needed to find out how he achieved 9/11, because what happened on 9/11, I believe today, it was not a controlled demolition, it was not nanothermite, and it certainly was not the pancake effect of two planes hitting a building. There was something else in play there, Alex. There was a weapon in play that day that I don't even know what it is, but it's, I can equate it to being like a microwave. You know how you can take a piece of chicken and put it on a paper plate and stick it in the microwave and the chicken will burn but the paper plate won't?
Yes.
Well, something happened that day equivalent to a microwave. And by capturing bin Laden, maybe we could find out what weapon he truly has. Because I just learned there were 1,400 cars toasted that day all over the streets of Manhattan.
No, no, that's right. Cars that didn't have anything fall on them were completely fried, but expanding. Just like a secret helicopter reportedly crashed. We know they're 30 years advanced what they really have, but there's another area that if you look at it, British physicists and others, and it turns out the government did measure this, you can confirm it, radioactive isotopes used in small nukes were picked up in levels off the charts in and around the towers.
No, I don't buy that. I don't buy that.
Now, well,
nukes were not used.
Well, the radiation was picked up. Now,
no, I don't buy it, because when those towers went down, there was less impact than when they brought down the Superdome in Seattle. And there should have been way more. Those towers literally disintegrated. They went into dust. And nukes don't do that. Not at that level. There would radiation would have been extremely high.
Well, I'll tell you, Tower 1 and 2 are very suspicious. But when you look at 7, that's a conventional controlled demolition.
No, it isn't. No, it was not either. Because you got to read the book, Where Did the Towers Go? By Dr. Judy Wood, the BS, MS, and PhD.
No, I know who she is. I know who she is.
I just finished her book. It's very remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you that Tower 1 and 2 exploded into pyrotechnic dust, and things were being ejected long distances. But 7, you can see the boom, 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 and the symmetrical collapse into its own footprint.
Yeah, but you also see it lathering up a half hour soon, where smoke started coming out of one side of the building and one side of the building only. You had cases, the dust was everywhere with paper. Always remember, there's a simple thing. When metal when something is hot, it will glow. But not everything that glows is hot.
Well, I know this. They do
there
have a lot
a
of...
There was a weapon used that day, Alex, but it's a weapon that's beyond anything that I know about.
Well, I'll tell you what I want to know. I want to know why they killed bin Laden. If he knew how to make NORAD stand down, he knew how to have aircraft do maneuvers that the best fighter pilots couldn't do at Flight 77 at the Pentagon. One and two are very suspicious, but when you look at seven, that's a conventional controlled demolition.
No, it isn't. No, it was not either.
Duh. Winning, winning. I was banging 7 gram rocks. That's how I roll. Winning. I had one gear. Go. Epic. Winning.
Are you bipolar?
I'm by winning. Went there, went everywhere. Winning. I'm a total freaking rock star from Mars. Winning. Come on, bro. I got talking blood. Winning. Bottle my brains and feel like, dude, can't handle it. Went there, went everywhere. Where?
It is said when you see someone who looks like they don't feel very well, you say, my goodness, you look like death eating a cracker. Or if they look really bad, you say, you look like death eating a cracker walking backwards.
The reason why certain people turn to philosophy, why I became a philosopher, was that since I was a little boy, I always felt that existence as such was weird. I mean, here we are. Isn't that odd? Of course it's odd. What do you mean by odd? Well, that's what's different from even. I mean, what's odd stands out. What's even lies flat. But you can't see the outstanding without the flat background. Here's the thing standing out. It's odd. Each one of you is odd. Strange, unique, particular, different. How do we know what we mean by that? Except against the background of something even that is not differentiated, like space. And so you get this philosophical itch. You begin to scratch your head and think about, why is that so? Well, after a while, you realize that's a meaningless question. And you ask, how is it so? Well, that leads you into science and other investigations. So you want to know, what is it? I mean, this happening, this thing called existence, what is it? You ask that question long enough and it suddenly hits you that if you could answer it, you wouldn't know what terms to put the answer in. I mean, when we investigate the properties of nature, and we do get some answers, all the answers are in terms of particular structures, forms, patterns. And these can be measured, and their behavior can be predicted. But when I want to ask the question, what are the forms made of? I mean, what is it really? We can't think of any way in which we could answer the question. Because we would have to have a class of all classes. When you ask the question, what? It's like saying, is you is or is you ain't? Is you animal? Is you vegetable? Is you mineral? Are you a Republican or a Democrat? Are you male or female? Are you a Christian or a Jew or a Hindu or what have you? We classify always to give an answer to the question, what is it? And when you classify, you distinguish an inside group from an outside group. Right. So what we want to know is, what is the group of all groups? Well, we can't imagine what the outside would be. So we can't answer the question. What is it?
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Booyakasha! Check it out, I is here with none other than my main man, Buzz Aldrin. I know this is a sensitive question, but what was it like not being the first man on the moon? Was you ever jealous of Louis Armstrong?
He was Neil Armstrong, and no, I was not jealous. He was a very, very qualified person, yeah.
So, when you arrived on the moon, was the people who lived there very friendly, or was they scared of you?
There was absolutely no thought of encountering any living being whatsoever.
Do you think man will ever walk on the sun?
No. The sun is too hot. It is not a good place to go to.
What happens if they went in winter when the sun is cold?
The sun is not cold in the winter.
We know you've been asked this a zillion times. It must really get in your tits being asked it. But let's just sort it out. What do you say to all those conspiracy theorists who come up to you and say, does the moon really exist?
I don't think there are very many people who question whether the moon exists. It exists.
And all right, you was heard it here. It does exist. So all those people out there who are saying it don't, you was wrong.
That's right. The moon does exist, and we went there.
Yo, listen up. But how do they really know what is exists and what is the conspiracy things? Because I know I have seen a picture of J-Lo. Apparently it weren't true.
I haven't seen those pictures.
Well, you should check them out. It's amazing.
Okay.
Is you upset that Michael Jackson got all the credit for inventing the moonwalk, but you was the first geezer ever to actually do it?
No. You can call things by different names, and you can use the moon or Mars or Venus, and you can say, this is the Venus trot. But that doesn't mean that it has any connection to what it would be like for a horse moving on Venus.
Yo.
The horse could trot on Venus, right? So it's very, very hot.
There's horse on Venus.
No. Neither is Michael Jackson on the moon.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.